Football Weekly Extra.
In today's geostationary report, Arsenal Hull, the Phil Brown Fabregas spat. Pod asks, if you can't swap some bodily fluids, what's the point of having sex? We preview the year 2014. Jetpacks, tropical swamps where East Anglia used to be, and Liverpool still waiting for the title as Rafa Benitez extends his Anfield stay. And the Sheffield United Carlos Tevez affair. It's not going away. As Neil Warnock and co plan more crazy suing than the Battle of Little Bighorn, we ask, wasn't it all their fault in the first place for having an Apache season? And won't this set off a chain of litigation? No wonder we've all got our reservations. Barry's here in a Mohican explain everything. Mohican. All that plus your post in Football Weekly Extra. Right, hello everybody. Barry is indeed here.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. Are you well?
Not too bad.
That's great news. Also in the pod today, Raphael. We missed your Monday, Raphael.
Hello.
Hi there. And Barney Rone.
Hello.
Who also wasn't with us on Monday, which is a shame, because you were telling us a great little story about stick-on eyes, Barney.
It was fun. It was one way of enjoying Match of the Day. Well, particularly the punditry inserts in Match of the Day. As I was telling you, I was watching it with on Sunday morning with my two-year-old son, who stuck some goggly eyes from his felt.
Are they the ones where the little black bits move when you do
Yeah, little bits move. Although it wasn't moving because it was on the television. He stuck them on Gary Lineker's eyes while he was talking. And this was quite funny. But the funny thing was the way it's produced, whenever they cut to the next pundit, he was also right in the middle of the screen. So the goggly eyes were on Alan Shearer. And then they were on Alan Hansen. And it made it really diverting. And we've actually left them on. I'm waiting for next week's Match of the Day because it's suddenly really watchable. And the goggly eyes will again be directly on Gary Lineker.
Why stop with goggly eyes?
Well, if Gerard Houllier is on.
That's perhaps where he got the idea.
Right.
But it's funny. He likes Match of the Day, actually.
Did he enjoy Alan Pardew's commentary?
Well, that was Match of the Day 2, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, sorry.
But thankfully, at that point, he wasn't watching.
Alan Pardew actually felt very sheepish about his line, in which he'd suggested that... was it Essien had raped somebody?
Mm.
Another player.
Essien had absolutely raped Ched Evans.
Right. In the sense that he had violated him and taken the ball off him without prior permission.
Well, he basically meant he'd skinned him or murdered him,
right.
Which if he'd said either of those two things, no one would have cared. So quite why everyone's making such a big fuss over this
right.
one.
But he was so upset really that he actually, because he was on Football Matters, the little-known Monday night debate show on Setanta, and he actually rang up and said, do you still want me to come in, poor chap? He was lovely when he came in. Excitingly, this coming Monday, we've got Neil Warnock.
Oh, won't that be fun?
Yeah, I hope he doesn't trip over anything in the studio or anything. Otherwise, our lawyers could be in for a long summer. Because I mentioned Neil Warnock, and I'd be interested to know if you or listeners indeed have any questions that I should put to him. Because Neil bravely this week announcing that he is now personally going to sue West Ham over the Carlos Tevez affair. Now, for those who really have been sticking their fingers in their ears, I do understand this, over the whole Sheffield United Tevez thing. Basically, the agreement was reached between the two clubs on Monday, I think it was, that West Ham would pay Sheffield United £15 million, I think is the figure that's being talked
possibly
of.
Possibly rising to £25
million. All right. And this for the fact that their use of the ineligible Carlos Tevez at the end of the 2006-2007 season saw Sheffield United relegated with all sorts of impact, of course, on their financial situation. Bizarrely, it appears that the players were not mentioned in Sheffield United's lawsuit, and so they, or 20 of them, are now, and Neil Warnock, the manager at the time, are now launching their own personal lawsuits against West Ham, who say they're not going to pay a penny to anybody.
Well, I'm also launching my own lawsuit against West Ham because I bet a friend of mine a tenner the last day of that particular season that Sheffield United would stay up and West Ham would go down. So I lost that tenner. I want it back. And the pub we were in at the time are also suing because of the revenue they lost from the £10 I did not spend on beer because I had to give it to my friend. And it's an endless chain reaction. Where will it stop?
Where?
I don't know. But if West Ham have their way, it'll stop right now because they want to draw a line under it.
I'm sure they do.
Just like Tony Blair decided, you know, okay, the Iraq war was a mistake. I'm a big clown. But hey, let's draw a line under it
right. And
move on. If only life were that simple.
If only. If only we could draw a line under it ourselves. But I do feel moved to us. When I read these stories, I think this is crazy. Where will it all end? And... There's no place in football for this kind of litigation. But when you look at it legally, Lord Griffiths made a ruling that Carlos Tevez, who wasn't eligible to play...
Sorry, just a brief time out here. Yep. I presume by you saying Tevez is ineligible, we're now going to have a load of West Ham fans on the ball going, he was eligible. It was a clerical error or something, seems to be the argument.
It's a thorny issue because West Ham fans will argue that possibly he should have been playing anyway, but the legal ruling seems to have been that he shouldn't have been and that he was decisive in earning West Ham the points with which they stayed up, sending Sheffield United down. Can anyone think of a solution that doesn't involve a summer of litigation?
No. Oh. I mean, even Ken Bates is involved now.
Yeah, now, can you explain that? Why is Ken Bates...
Because everyone else is doing it, and he's the most litigious man alive, allegedly. So if there's court cases going on and easy money to be made, Ken's going to want a slice.
He's launching a claim for success-related bonuses that would have been due on transfer fees had the Blades stayed up.
So these are players that he had sold to Sheffield United, and they would have had to pay him more for them if they hadn't been relegated at the end of the
presumably
season.
Presumably he's had some legal advice on this, but it sounds incredibly remote as a form of loss and establishing a chain of likely causation, which you have to do, of course.
By this precedent, I mean, as one of the Guardian journalists wrote this week, even the pie seller or the hot dog man at Bramall Lane can sue for loss of revenue from the fact that they weren't in the Premier League.
Well, if Ken Bates gets the money he's owed by suing, then possibly he'll be able to pay the ambulance men that he left high and dry when Leeds went into administration.
How much did he leave them high and dry for?
700 or 800 quid.
That's a shocking story.
It is a shocking story.
That is a shocking story.
He's not a nice man.
Well, the Leeds business, West Ham Tevez business has been all over the post this week. Chuck Schick, Roy A1, Roger Palmer, Jimmy the Kid, among the many who were posting in on that subject. Chuck Schick wanted to know if we can think of any manager as deluded and full of self-regard as Neil Warnock. Okay, any non-Portuguese manager as deluded and full of self-regard as Neil Warnock. Well, tell you what, that wasn't the only news this week. Rafa Benitez, as mentioned, signing a new deal. What's he get after his 5 months of negotiations? Did he win any big concessions?
Well, he gets loads of money and he gets sole control over the Liverpool transfer kitty.
He does.
Which is what he wanted. Mm. But obviously, that's not the reason he said he signed. He said he signed because his heart is in Liverpool and he loves the club and he loves the fans, blah, 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 blah.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens from here then, isn't it? Because this is what he's wanted all along. He's now got it. He's got a long contract. And it's been something he's fought against for a long time. And now he's got an open field and be very interesting to see where he goes.
But Barney, you seem to think that this makes no difference at all. He could still be off whenever he chooses.
Well, of course he can. He's saying, I mean, he sounds extremely committed, but people break contracts all the time. It doesn't mean he's going to be there until 2014. You can just give notice and leave. That's the law.
Do you see this as having a positive impact on the club, Rafael?
First of all, I think you have to say, regardless of how his particular buys have worked out in the past, you have to say, I think that the example shows that managers who are in control of transfer policy have a better chance to succeed on their own terms. Especially compared with what's happening at Arsenal, at Man United, I think you need, at least in theory, have that control. I don't know if he's got sole control now. What I've read is that he's got more control of a transfer policy, which would suggest that before he said, buy me a defender, and then he brought Philip Dagan and that kind of stuff.
All right. Well, Liverpool facing Villa after last weekend's momentous victory over Manchester United. They face Villa this weekend. And obviously they need to win all their remaining matches and hope that Man United drop some to Liverpool. But what of Aston Villa? Is this a bit of a make-or-break weekend for them, or can they count on Arsenal slipping up?
Well, I think they really do need to get a result, because Arsenal getting these players back, and they do look strong. I mean, they've had this long unbeaten run, but too many draws. And having Walcott back's a massive thing for them. Mm. He just gives them a totally different dimension. And they look really strong. You can tell they're going to go on a run. You can just feel it. And Villa really need to. Though they've beaten Liverpool once in 10 years, I think.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think it was this season, wasn't it?
How about this for a stat? Martin O'Neill has never won a Premier League match in the month of March in his time at Aston Villa. There you go,
wow,
eh?
Amazing.
Yeah. Svari posting in saying, have you noticed that Aston Villa's free fall in the league table coincides with the injury of Martin Larsson? Coincidence, I think not. Other people suggesting that it might be the arrival of Heskey that's disrupted their mechanisms.
I think it's been said before, the squad is just not quite big enough to deal with things. And unfortunately, I think that they've already missed their chance. The Stoke game, I think, will loom large when it comes to looking back at the league. And And it's a really a shame in a way, because, you know, with the Champions League, we're going to talk about it in a bit, being dominated by the same four clubs, I think everybody, the whole of Europe, would have loved to see Villa coming in, and yet again it looks like the same four teams are going to end up next year.
But on the other hand, they've just not been good enough, have they? I mean, they've had a good run at it, and Arsenal seem to be playing better at the moment.
Guys, it's a long way from being over. You've got eight games left, and they're level on points with Arsenal,
and Everton aren't out of the mix as well. It'd be great to see
Everton only 4 points behind. All right, what about United then, returning to the title battle, because they're at Fulham, where they won 4-0 a couple of weeks back in the cup. Sir Alex Ferguson having one of his little broadsides at Benitez, returning to the subject of his rant, calling that weird, and failing to name him in his list of three best managers in the Premier League. Not too much of a surprise there.
Who did he list?
He said Arsene Wenger, Martin O'Neill, but he and Wenger are now friends. Martin O'Neill and David Moyes. Interesting that he's giving David Moyes a bit of a nod there, because some people say, you know, he would be the ideal replacement for Sir Alex at Old Trafford. A fiery Scotsman. Blackburn have won at Craven Cottage. Presumably United are going to go in and get the 3 points.
Well, they've beaten them 9 times out of 9. Man United beaten Fulham 9 times in a row.
Good Lord.
And Fulham have beaten Man United once since 1963. And they've played quite a lot.
Hats off to you, Barney Roney. What about Chelsea?
Guys, just apologise. Sorry. Sometimes I know. Not at all. I get excited.
Chelsea, you'll get excited about this, I'm sure. It was 4-4 at White Hart Lane as Spurs hosted Chelsea last season. A prediction for this time around, Barney Rooney?
Probably a draw.
Spurs are unbeaten in the last 5 Premier League matches. But then again, Chelsea have been on fire since Hiddink arrived. And oh, look at this, have only conceded 1 goal in the last 5 league matches.
Sorry, you're looking at me and I wasn't listening to what you said.
No.
Sorry.
What were you thinking about, Ray?
I was wondering if the Alex Ferguson interview to which you're alluding is the one that appeared in the New Statesman.
That's the one.
Do you think that Sir Alex Ferguson noted... Shipyard Firebrand and Trade Unionist is aware that the New Statesman doesn't acknowledge the National Union of Journalists?
I can't possibly comment on that. I wasn't aware of
that. And if he was aware of that, would he have done the interview with them and their guest editor, Alistair Campbell, lovely gentleman that he is?
Well, again, questions.
when Ferguson will be on Football Matters, you can put that to him.
File that one away then. Excellent. That's as far as we're going to go with all of that, because of course it's all about if Manchester United drop any points, and then maybe somebody will catch them up. We'll see. Anyway, you can find out more about all the latest developments from the exciting world of the Premier League at guardian.co.uk, and indeed here in a second or two when we'll be discussing things like the battle at the bottom, Arsenal, spitting, etc.
Football Weekly Extra on guardian.co.uk.
Now, on Tuesday night, the FA Cup 6th round, so Arsenal beat Hull 2-1. As a result, they go through to face Chelsea. A couple of issues there. Was the winning goal offside?
Of course.
It was?
Yeah.
All right.
So I missed that game because I was still in a coma having watched West Brom v West Ham the night before. possibly the worst Premiership game of all time.
I can't agree with you there, Barry.
You joke me.
No, there's no possibly in that sentence.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
Right, okay. It was awful. But Arsenal Hull, Rafa, it sounds like you actually saw this, did you?
I did, yeah.
Right. Was Phil Brown right to get really, really, really upset?
No, of course not. I mean, the thing about the booing and the time wasting, opposition players getting booed in the stadium, that's something new and really something to get worth getting upset about. And there were time wasting from the beginning. And how he could say that the game turned when Arsene Wenger got my goalkeeper booked.
For time wasting, which he was doing.
Yeah. That's to say that the game turned at this point is a bit right. Bizarre. And I think he just felt really aggrieved because, yes, the goal was offside, clearly. Wenger was just being really mischievous and saying, it came off the goalkeeper. First had come off an Arsenal head and it was clearly offside. And to lose so late in the game after really resisting valiantly is galling, of course. Mm. And then whatever happened in the tunnel must have upset him further. But I think if you want to talk about rants and people cracking up and losing the plot, he is your candidate.
Phil Brown.
Yeah.
4 points separate Hull from the bottom three. And it's by no means over that one, that particular relegation battle. And what is the story with Fabregas? I mean, the evidence seems to be that something took place between Fabregas and Phil Brand's assistant.
Yeah, the story is that he spat near him, near his feet.
Right.
And it was...
He denies that, though.
He said the spitting incident was directed towards him. It's kind of... It's a version of he spat at him, but we're not quite sure.
Okay.
But Fabregas was marching around the pitch at the end of the game. He didn't play.
Right.
And was there in his civvies wearing a leather jacket and a hoodie and a pair of jeans. And he was storming around the centre circle at the end of the game, looking like a chav who was trying to get a fight outside a nightclub in Essex at 2 o'clock in the morning.
We got a picture of him here. He does look quite scary. He's quite stuffed into his jacket. He doesn't look very comfortable. Maybe that was the problem.
But he insists there was no spitting incident and that he's never spat at anyone before in his life.
But Phil Brown's complaints don't end with the spitting. It's also the manner of attire.
Oh, yeah. Phil Brown, and it was Rich coming from the man who was wearing the Ben Elton jacket in the dugout last weekend, has complained about the manner in which Cesc Fabregas was dressed and has even gone so far as to wonder why the Arsenal club captain would be on the pitch at an Arsenal game. So even if he wasn't playing, so. But Brown also complained that Arsene Wenger never ever shakes his hand after games, which has since been proven to be complete bullshit. And Fabregas's insistence that he hasn't spat at anyone before has also been cast into doubt because of his YouTube footage, which appears to show him, at best, drooling in the general direction of Michael Ballack's face, rather carelessly.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I remember being at the game and talking to Ballack afterwards, and that particular Arsenal playing Bayern in 2005 Champions League quarterfinals. Sorry, last 16. And that incident was never mentioned. It never came up. He never made any accusations that Fabregas, not to my knowledge, certainly, that Fabregas had spat at him. And I think the video is a little bit inconclusive as well. I think it could be that that Fabregas suffers from what we in German call feuchte Aussprache, a sort of wet pronunciation.
Mm.
That, you have a word for that.
Yeah.
That's great.
You know, when people get very excited and they shout, then a bit of fluid travels as well, perhaps involuntarily. And I do know this well because this affliction, because we used to have a Latin teacher who was known for that. And one of my classmates actually once opened an umbrella in the first row and then got severely reprimanded for
it. I imagine he did.
I was spat on by Michael Gambon once in the theatre. He's got that really badly. The first few rows, you get sprayed.
Same thing happened to me at a Bob Carroll G's gig.
Right. Thanks for that. There you go. Okay, well, we were saying that Hull could be in some trouble then, potentially. They are at Wigan, who trounced them 5-0 in the reverse fixture earlier this season, and have good form against bottom side. Steve Bruce's team beginning to get back into shape now after a bit of disruption caused by the January transfer window. Could be more problems in store there for Hull, though.
Well, they could indeed. I mean, I read this morning that the much maligned centre-half Titus Bramble, who was an object of complete ridicule in his Newcastle United days, is about to be offered a contract extension and a pay rise.
Hmm.
So his return to form is... and there's no doubt he was a very promising player as a young lad. So his return to form is sort of indicative of how well things are going at Wigan.
My word, Barry. Now, meantime, Arsenal are at Newcastle, which ties in nicely with the whole relegation thing, because let's just make the point about the bottom, the situation at the bottom of the table. West Brom, 6 points adrift. Then you've got Stoke and Middlesbrough in the bottom three. But within 4 points of the drop, you've got everybody up to, 12th place, Bolton. So Bolton, Hull, Sunderland, Blackburn, Newcastle and Portsmouth are outside the bottom three, but all in some danger. Newcastle have only won one of their last 11 Premier League outings. Arsenal have a rotten record in the North East and at St James's Park. We've spoken about Arsenal already. Obviously, they're in cracking form in the last couple of games. Let's speak about the Magpies then.
Well, Newcastle have Michael Owen back, which is a massive thing for them, and he'll score 5 goals before the end of the season and probably keep them up. He does score goals, even when he comes back semi-fit.
Okay,
it'll make a difference.
Also from that list of teams in trouble, Portsmouth hosting Everton. Their only victory against a team in the top six this season was a 3-0 win over Everton. But that was then, and this is very much now. That was before Harry Redknapp had slung his particular hook. And they've got a rotten record these days at home, Portsmouth. So possibly further fuel there for Everton and their charge on the top four.
You'd imagine. I don't think Everton will get in the top four. I think they'll finish above Aston Villa.
Yeah, they're
a good side, Everton, without having any particularly marvellous players or big name players. And they've coped admirably with the absence of Mikel Arteta.
Mm.
And I thought they would go into free fall when his knee was knacked there recently, but no, they've been keeping it together very well.
Extraordinary, haven't they? Manchester City are hosting Sunderland. City, of course, a different side at home. And Blackburn Rovers, meanwhile, are hosting West Ham. Rovers, did you know they've only lost 3 of 12 league games since Sam Allardyce took charge? And West Ham beginning to run out of impetus a little bit. Some big injuries there, of course. Barami out, one or two others as well. So perhaps Blackburn going to continue their move away from the bottom three and possibly Sunderland drifting further down into the mire?
I can see Sunderland getting relegated, no problem. And I think they're far from safe. I heard talk in the office this morning that their manager is already, Spraggia is already under pressure and that he has till the end of the season to save his job. And if their recent performances are anything to go by, they are very much doomed.
Oh dear. It'll be interesting to see what the weekend brings. We'll have a full update on the relegation battle, of course, in Monday's Football Weekly. Let's move on now to some posts before we conclude part two. Greatest post of all time ever in the history of posting, it says here. DN Wong, we salute your return, as he brings us his first 11 of players with rude-sounding names. Excellent. They're playing a 5-3-2 formation. In goal, Quim. No mistakes there. Not sure who this right back is. Arce? Oh, Arce, yeah, okay. Shitu, Jay de Kock, Angelico, who's that? Looks like it must be Fuchs, And Fanny, excellent. Schweinsteiger, Tit, who's a player from the Syrian under-20s, and Totti in the midfield. And Windass and... Oh, well, they say that's Fuchs there. He's got Windass, Dean Windass and Fuchs up front. Not sure who that player
Surely
was.
Surely he is Stefan Kuntz in there somewhere.
Mooks then posts in saying, Stefan Kuntz should be on your subs bench. He's probably a bit old now to get into the first 11. There's nothing rude about Schweinsteiger, though, is there?
Well, isn't there a talk that it translated into English, it means pig shagger.
Pig mounter. Literally, yeah.
Oh, really? Okay. Although...
Is that a profession in Germany, like baker and butcher?
Probably used to be at some stage.
Right. Every village had one.
But other people say Schweinsteiger means somebody who had a shed with pigs, because Steig is a little shed. So.
Well, all right, well, good to get that one
open to
up.
Interpretation, that one.
Yeah.
Can I suggest a referee?
Please.
Martin Jan's brother, Cock.
Right. Excellent, okay.
That's his name, is it?
Yeah, okay.
He's a referee. He was.
Nice. Well, he's in there. Finally, thanks. How was Nicholas Bentner on Tuesday night?
Bentnerish.
Right. Okay. Is that a good or a bad thing, Rafa?
I think it's a bad thing. I mean, for a striker who doesn't really contribute an awful lot to his team but doesn't score is just not a quite great combination.
Well, but he's like Robbie Keane, isn't he? He gets in good positions. He works hard. Who needs goals when your striker is working hard and getting in good positions?
Yeah, exactly. Miss? Although, the reason I mentioned this is... I see. Lots of people posting in.
I know they're posting. They're idiots.
They're not idiots.
They
may express a different point of view to your own. We had a bit of a go.
But their point of view is wrong. Well, a striker
some
who
of these
gets
people
in good positions
with you,
and works
Barry.
Hard. I could play for Arsenal.
Some of them agreeing
get
with
in
you.
Good positions right. and work hard.
Right.
But they're not idiots. The ones who
do you think you
the ones who didn't
position.
Agree with you are idiots.
The ones who disagree with me are wrong. We had the same thing when Robbie Keane was at Liverpool. People arguing that because he worked hard and got in good positions, he was a brilliant striker.
Right. Now, we had a bit of a go at him on Monday's pod, or made a few jokes, and lots of people posted in, Ars Technica, for example, saying that in actual fact he does lots of good things. Stilton making your point about Robbie Keane and suggesting there's no point in having a striker who doesn't score. Pet RF, though, cites Emil Heskey, who doesn't score much but is regarded as valuable by clubs all over the place and indeed just moved to Aston Villa for that very reason, gets into England squad on the same basis. He says about
Bentner.
Unlike
Nicholas Bentner, Emil Heskey doesn't regularly give interviews and talk about what a great player he is, how marvellous he is, and how he should be a first choice selection in every game.
Well, that is a good point. PetRF does say that he gives Arsenal a target, not PetRF, Bentner gives Arsenal a target for long balls out of the back, something they don't otherwise have when Adebayor is out. So there you go. That's what he does. I don't know. But I'm interested to hear all these opinions. Ligue 1, Ale Le Marseillais says, what exactly needs to happen in Ligue 1 for it to get a mention in the pod? We have a title race for the first time in years. Six teams within 4 points off the top. We have a great Bolo Zenden goal with a comedy collapsing box celebration. Did you see that? He jumped on a box and to celebrate, and somebody else jumped on it and it collapsed, and they both disappeared inside the wreckage. Number nine, also posting in with a long-winded post explaining why Liga is so exciting right now. I have to say, we will get onto this hopefully on Monday, but it sounds like both of you know way more than we could tell you about Liga anyway.
Sounds so like a job for Paul Doyle.
Right. Raphael?
Can I just say that Liga itself is asking themselves the very question how they could get on the pod and indeed onto more media outlets, because they are thinking of reforming the league and awarding extra points for wins with two goals difference because there's been so few goals. And actually, it is very exciting. And the fact that Lyon have lost now 100 games and are still top is very exciting. But it also shows you that the teams at the top have the lowest points average of all top teams in the rest of Europe. So it would suggest to me that the quality is perhaps a little bit dubious.
That Lyon have scored 36 goals in 28 games, which is the stuff of Yawn.
It is. Anyway, we'll see what Paul Doyle thinks about all this. Joey Cunningham is excited on the subject of French football in the fact that Marseille have gone through in the UEFA Cup. A 2-2 draw at Ajax. Tyrone Mears on the score sheet. Can English players hack it on the continent? Can they ever? Tyrone Mears, says the excited Joey Cunningham, using exclamation marks liberally. Well, if you've got any messages or comments, as you probably know, guardian.co.uk/footballweekly is the place to do it. Or find us on Facebook. In a second or two, we're going to be having a quick look at what awaits us on the continent this weekend. So stick around for that. Barney Rone, if you weren't in journalism, you'd be a lawyer, but you gave it up because there were too many meetings.
That's correct, yeah. Meetings, terrible things. My whole life just revolved around going to meetings.
But Barry, you clearly would have been a stand-up comedian were you not in journalism. Was there
I wouldn't be.
Would you have followed your father into the veterinary profession?
I would never have had the necessary application required.
What would you have been if you had, what would you like to have been if you weren't a journalist?
Well, there are many who would argue that I'm not a journalist.
Right.
And many do on a weekly basis on the book. I don't know. I would like to be a vet, but I wouldn't have the necessary... I'd like to think I'm clever enough, but I just never had the necessary application to study to get the exam results required to go and study veterinary.
Raphael?
I was also in law before.
No way!
Yeah, I did a law degree, but then found it far too boring.
Oh, okay. Mm. Crikey.
But the dream job would have been archaeologist for me.
Really? Yeah.
I didn't get to say a dream job.
Oh, go on, dream job, Barney.
I'd like to run a really small little coffee stand on a busy street, maybe not in London, maybe in New York, and to know all my customers really well, and for them to maybe call me by an affectionate nickname, and to be sort of just know, people know about you, and they come to your store, and they chat with you. That'd be great. If you could arrange that somehow.
Oh, I was going to go with jet fighter pilot, but yours
is... No, mine's more sort of homely.
Right. Okay, nice one. Let's see. Now, the Bundesliga, Raphael Honigstein. Is it exciting?
Yeah, it is very exciting, of course.
Yeah.
Yes, you'd expect me to say that.
Let's have some exclamation marks.
Yes, exclamation marks. Well, after Voronin scored with his sexy chest, and that is a quote
from
him.
Yeah, now what's the sexy chest business?
Well, he said Finner players wouldn't have scored that goal. I scored with my sexy chest. The ball bounced off him.
Right.
He shot at goal, bounced off the Leverkusen keeper, back to... onto his chest and from there into goal. And he called it meine geile Brust, my sexy chest.
It's a phrase worth remembering.
It's I'm sure some of us have scored with a sexy chest.
Sure.
James?
Although he, technically, when you open his chest was repulsive in this sense, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Very okay, good. Now what's happening?
Because they're 4 points clear.
4 points clear.
And from week to week, people are still wondering why they are top. They're saying the sorts of things that English papers or indeed European papers would say about the German national team in the 80s. Oh, they're very well organised, really defensive, methodical. In other words, it's really backhanded compliments for saying, or another way of saying they're really terribly dull and annoying to watch, but very, very successful. And all the sort of the big names and the teams who have been dazzling with lots of goals are still 4 points adrift. You've got Wolfsburg, you've got Hamburg, you've got Bayern, all 4 points behind. And Hoffenheim, sadly, have slipped up a little bit since the winter break. And you really feel that they've missed Ibisevic, who was the leading goal scorer with 18 after 17 games. And he got injured in the winter break and they haven't quite looked the same.
Am I correct in saying he not only got injured but got cruelly hacked down by an opposition player? And Klinsmann's even said, you know, it's a pity he's out because it would have been interesting to see how they'd have got on if he'd stayed fit.
Yeah, I mean, Klinsmann actually meant it. I think he is sort of a striker talking about another striker that he really felt regret for Ibisevic being out. But there is a suggestion that he might actually be back before the end of the season. He's training really, really hard. He's already running around. Whether it'll be enough for Hoffenheim to get into the Champions League, I doubt, because they've only now won one game out of seven since the break, and that's really not good enough.
Bayern Munich could have Ribéry and Luca Toni back from injury as they host bottom of the table Karlsruhe.
Yeah, and of course Landon Donovan had to go back to the States because the Bayern board wouldn't sanction the transfer, and now Klinsmann is sort of saying, well, if only we still had Landon, because Klose's out with a really nasty ankle injury for up to 8 weeks. Luca Toni hasn't been able to play in the last 3 weeks, so they've only got Lukas Podolski up front, which isn't really a lot at all. So while they could possibly play Ribéry as a second striker and Luca Toni might come back, it's doesn't bode too well, I think, for their chances, certainly in Europe.
Mm-hmm. And Werder Bremen is through to the last 16 in the UEFA Cup, and Pizarro scoring again.
Yeah, Pizarro scoring. I mean, Pizarro, the big story has been off the pitch for him, unfortunately, because he's in all sorts of trouble. He's a partner in a football agency in Peru, and a guy called Carlos Delgado is the big shot of Peru, sort of the Pinny Zahavi of Peruvian football. His wife left him, took 4,000 pages of highly sensitive documents with her in a fight about alimony, etc., and she's now releasing them bit by bit to the Peruvian and German press. And already the Werder, president, chairman, had to resign because he's been implicated in some very dodgy money movements after a couple of transfers. Pizarro is being investigated by FIFA because there is a suggestion that he owned part of the transfer rights to a player that he was playing with at Bremen, which is strictly against FIFA regulations. You can't work as an agent in any shape or form if you're an active player. He could be banned up to 2 years. And he's also wanted in Peru to talk about tax evasion, etc., all connected with the Delgado business. So that story has been overshadowing Bremen's really excellent run of results in recent weeks. And as you said, they got through to the quarters in UEFA Cup, and they absolutely hammered Stuttgart, and they're probably, if they continue like that, even pushed back into Europe after having a really disastrous season. But that Pizarro is the big story, and Bremen were all set to make a move and buy him off Chelsea because he's still a Chelsea player. But now, with the way things have gone, they've already said, well, if anything, any of these allegations stick, we won't be buying him.
Remarkable. And how did she get hold of the dossier? Was she involved in the business as well, or what?
No, I think they were just lying around as she went to the office. I think there's a lesson there for all of us that you don't want to leave any sensitive documents around.
I don't really have any sensitive documents. Yes, well, hell wife, hath perhaps. No fury then, than yes. A woman scorned.
My word. Excellent stuff, Rafael. No Sid this week because not much has happened in Spain, so he's going to bring us the latest when something does happen, which will probably be Monday, we feel. In the meantime, we can report that he and Astea are well. A couple of games coming up in Italy, which, if you can find them on a computer, or perhaps you're in a country where they actually show the stuff, you might like to look at. And Napoli are taking on Milan. Roberto Donadoni, the new Napoli manager, against Carlo Ancelotti, the man who many thought he might end up replacing at Milan. And big game there for Napoli, who basically, what is it now? They haven't won in 10 games now. And a big game coming up there at the San Paolo. Milan coming off a 5-1 win away to Siena last weekend, but knowing them, they'll probably be wrong. But who knows? It's very hard to predict what'll happen with Milan, because consistent they are not. The other big game this weekend isn't Inter. They're taking on Regina, down at the other end of the table. Roma, though, are up against Juventus, one of the big, big grudge games in Italy. Roma haven't won that one since 2004. Roma, of course, are still struggling to get back into the top four. They're a couple of points off it. Genoa currently hold the fourth place. And Roma have had three consecutive draws against Inter, Udinese and Sampdoria. They really need a result this time around. Juve, though, on a roll. That is it for Serie A. And indeed, I think for Football Weekly Extra, Barney Rone is struggling to stay awake. So Barney,
just concentrating.
Oh, were you? All right.
Dreaming of his hot dog stand. Yeah. In York.
Hey Barney.
There's a coffee stand. I said, oh, sorry. Organic kind of coffee stand.
How about those Mets? Huh? I'll have a bagel to go.
I imagine myself sort of being like a police informer as well, knowing.
Yeah, I got that. That you
coming
were going
leaning on me.
What's the skinny on the street?
What's the skinny?
Probably there's a listener out there who has a coffee stroke hot dog stand in New York.
But they need someone to run it.
Well, and it's probably feeling that what they'd really like to do is hang around a recording studio in near Earth orbit and occasionally fashion.
Talk about lawsuits and stuff. Contract extensions and
a job swap.
Well, yeah, I'd like to wear a hat.
Yeah,
some kind of hat, like a flat cap.
All right,
but that's my only condition.
Right. Okay. Galliani wants a salary cap, but it's not quite the same kind of thing, is it? Anyway, very good. That's it for today. We've rambled long enough. We'll see you on Monday. Many thanks to everybody.